a Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Hey everybody, welcome along. Part three of my chat with Greg Crick, and there was so much to talk to. Well, two wasn't enough. We had to do three. And I think if you listened to the first two parts of my chat with Cricky, you'll understand how there's so much more left to talk about. Now on this one, part three, we cover off more of the impact of Bathurst 2014 and the illness that caused massive issues for Cricky's health. We talk about his fight back to go racing again and how concussions played their part and what brought an end to his on-track racing career. We talk about the Gary, Barry and Larry show and what he's doing these days with the team at Gary Rogers Motorsport, and he answers the National Motor Racing Museum's Couch Racer Questions, where he tackles the questions that you, our listeners, have asked. So let's get back into the chat. We pick up on Cricky's return to the mountain in October 2014 at the wheel of his TCM Charger. It's one that ended with him back to his winning ways. One thing I thought about too, with thinking back to Jason Richards, racing cars was the distraction for him being a crook. So that you went back to Bathurst later that year to get back in the Charger, and you said before how probably shouldn't have done that, but amazing what your mental focus can do when you find a target of or an achievement or a goal or a destination, zeroed in on it. I am driving that car at that track on, you know, X date. Powerful, really powerful.
That was part of me getting better. Like after being told by the doctors that you know, 3 years you might be in care, you might have a lifespan of six.
So they're basically thinking that your body's just going to shut down for a year.
And I just rejected it. I decided to totally reject it. It took me a week where I was just smashed and I thought it's the end. And then I just decided to focus again.
Here we are, charging on, doing well,
it was very interesting though. Like I know that I raced, I think, maybe at Sandown and at Bathurst, I think I did two races. And
I remember you did.
The blokes basically lifted me out of the car, like my old mates, Johnny Walker and Kev, who've been with me forever.
Yeah, just toasted. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was part of the drive to actually get back and get going again, and just to move on. And that, you know, like it was in my early days, the motor racing was my focus to make some money. It was and my family, your focus of going racing again gave me a goal to push towards.
And whereabouts did the car dealerships and the business stuff wind down?
Well, they told me I wouldn't be able to run the business and that, you know, I'd need to prepare.
So they're double whacking you here. You're not going car racing. Your life's going to be no good and your business. So you're going, oh, great, triple threat. Thanks a lot.
I need to, my son came in and started to help, and I have my daughter and son in the business and they helped. But, it, you know, I knew that I needed to sell it, so I actually sold the business.
But you went back to Bathurst.
Yep.
And you went back to the 12-hour. Didn't just go back to any old thing.
Yeah,
so you,
I did,
you ended
up
going and having a run in an Audi.
Yep.
With a Luffy. Luffy was part of that that lineup. So that was at the start of 15. And then later in 15, I think you won at Phillip Island, didn't you, with Chris Meese, the German
Audi we went
guy.
Well in Adelaide. So I was driving with Christopher and we won. No, we went well in Adelaide. I can't think where we finished. Won the race at Phillip Island. But I was struggling. Like I couldn't remember from 1 week to the next when I got in that car. I couldn't remember where the pit lane limiter was, where the traction control was. Every time I got in it, I'd have to relearn what I was doing.
Start all over again and go again.
Yeah.
Almost like a reset of a race car
every time
to do it.
The old computer didn't retain too much. That was the problem.
But you guys won.
Yeah.
I mean, here you are saying that you couldn't remember where the buttons were and they have to re-coach every round.
Yeah.
You won.
I think Christopher Meese was the biggest reason for that.
Well, yeah, but you did your bit too. You did your bit too. But the other thing, wasn't there a crash at Ipswich in the Charger as well around that time?
That was the finish.
Yeah, so it wasn't so, you know, that was the thing that made you go.
No, it wasn't made me go. I, there was Keith Kosolke, Jim Richards and myself going through, I don't know the number of the turn, but the end of the
end of the back straight.
And the guy in the pacer,
Tilly.
Tilly from Sydney went off in the braking area and came down the grass and hit us. And I had quite a severe impact, but I didn't think it was that bad. But when you looked at the in-car, I was actually slumped in the car again. I was probably unconscious for a short
time.
Turned
the lights out for a quick moment.
Just a quick moment. But that I was okay. The car was pretty wrecked. Took it back to Norwell to Paul Morris's joint, and I was there the next day, pulled it apart to get it fixed. And when I went to drive home that night, he was in the truck with me, my truck. I couldn't drive, couldn't pick up the apexes of the corners. You know, he said, "What are you doing, dude? What's wrong with you?" And I pulled over and had to get him to drive home. And then the next day I was even worse. And I flew to Melbourne and came straight to Dr. Paul Noon in Melbourne, who had been treating me to try and...
Since the Bathurst 12-hour, I
think? Yeah, since the 12-hour. That was part. I went to everything alternative that I could do because the medical profession told me there's nothing you can do. How you are is how you're going to be. So I looked for everything. And he treated me did a lot of brain exercises, eye exercises and all that sort of thing to refire my brain. And I got to tell you, it made an enormous difference. And so I went straight back to him and he did all the tests on me and said, "You got severe concussion again." And he said, "I got to tell you that if you keep doing this, I'm not going to be able to bring you back out of it one day."
Yeah.
"And do you want to stay like this for the rest of your life?" So that day I quit. That was the day.
It's a very real...
Yeah.
One thing to have a doctor tell you
a
year or so before that, but the
racing... The doctors were actually right.
Yeah.
You know, what they told me was basically right, but my pig-headedness and my will to keep going got me back in a car, but then eventually I came to the realisation I couldn't do it. But you got to realise I was then probably... 61 or 62.
Yeah, late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah. Well, I was early 60s, I reckon.
I was trying to be nice to get you. I was trying to get you in the 50s.
I was 58 when I did the 12-hour in the Erebus car. But I was that fit then that I'd done 6 triathlons that year. Never been so fit in my life.
Wow.
And that's pretty funny because that's another reason why they reckon I was able to become so damaged. Because I was so fit, you can operate at a higher temperature over your normal temperature without becoming nauseous, and that's obviously what I did for that whole stint.
You said before about the concussions, big thing in sport, like, you know, we're big footy fans and some of the whacks that some of those blokes cop and then, you know, years on that they have sort of effects. And you said like some motor racing ones. Was there one at Lakeside, I think, in the Ericsson car?
Yeah, that was a bad
one. That was a big wall banger, that probably because it wasn't on tally and I think it was in practice or qualifying or something.
Yeah.
Was that one of the ones that
it broke something on the left front. I don't know the names of the corners there. I can't remember, but it was a big three-quarter on crash into the Armco. But I also, I'd forgotten about that too. I ran a Porsche in about 2003 or something in Targa and actually hit a tree. My head came out the window and hit a tree hard enough to crack my helmet. And I had 2 brain scans then at the hospital in Launceston, and when I had the brain scans in Hobart 10 years later, they said, "When did you have the brain bleed?" And I said, "Where?"
This is after the 12-hour thing.
Yep. I said, "Where?" And they showed me where, and I said, 2003 or 4, when I hit a tree in Targa.
Oh, and so that just had not been...
Hadn't been
picked up along the way.
So I've got the scans to prove it, what concussions do to you and what they do to your brain. You know, I had that much white damage around the outside of my brain. It was quite amazing.
So had you not got sick, had that whole 12-hour thing not cooked you, how much longer could you have kept racing for? Because, I mean, the result, the speed that day showed that at nearly 60 you were, you know, you would have been a bronze in demand for sure.
Yeah, well, I always planned to race till I was 80.
Yeah,
and I physically still feel like I could today, and I know that the older we get, the better we were, and sometimes you think that you can do things you can't, but I think you can still race at a level. Like, I mightn't be able to drive a GT car as quickly as I might have been able to once, but I could still enjoy myself in a Storics or Touring Car Masters or something and have good fun. But I always plan to race. I still have a license. I still have a drive to do some testing. I drive my grandson's Hyundai, which really scares me. But you know,
well, your grandson or the Hyundai?
No, the Hyundai. No, no, they're all jokes aside, they are a fantastic training car. But I would have kept racing for a long, long time, I think, because I just love the sport and I love the people and I love the camaraderie.
Historics would have probably been the thing, or what do you reckon you would have
done? I don't know. I'd have found something to drive. Yeah. You know, like it's just you want to drive something. I've got the first time in my life ever I've got a nice road car and I take that to the track every now and then and do a few laps in that and wear the brake pads out in 10 laps and all that sort of thing.
What do you got? What do you drive?
People will cane me for this, but I've got an Alfa Romeo Giulia Quadrifoglio. Oh. It's people say you're mad, you know. I hope you're in the RACT, which I am, but they're a great driver's car.
Motorsport's big part. These days we see you around the ARG Speed Series.
Yeah.
Close connection with the guys at Gary Rogers Motorsport. You spent a couple of years with Jordan Cox in TCR.
Mm.
What connected you to the Gary thing? Because the Rogers are big in Tassie. You're big in Tassie. Was it the Tassie thing that kind of got you in there, or how did this all come to be?
I've known him forever, you know, from back when he was racing the Escort, and we've always had a bit of banter and a bit of fun. And there was a couple of times I was almost going to drive for him, but it didn't quite happen in supercars.
Late V8s, yeah. What with Bathurst and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He didn't pay enough, did he?
Nah. Never would. No, but we became quite good friends. And then he was one of the ones, like the people that you don't expect. Like when I was in hospital, you'd never get any sympathy from Gary, but I'd get a phone call every 2 days. How you going, sonny? Yeah, oh, I'm not too good. Oh, well, get on with it. You'll be right.
That sounds like Gary. Yep.
But you'd have that contact. And the other one was Roland, who rang me daily and then actually made a lot of submissions and that to Motorsport Australia to do something about cockpit temperatures in cars and that, which they did.
Yeah.
So anyway, Gary and I have had a connection for a long time. And then I started going to a few races with them for a bit of fun with Gary and Barry to have some fun, which we did. Yeah. Had lots of fun. And a few jammos of a night before we went to bed. And
some of the problems of the world.
And then I ended up, you know, doing a bit of work. And then I sort of ran Jordan in the Alpha for a year and you know, and then had a couple of years with him on the Peugeot.
Mm.
Mm. And then that's too hard for me now because it's too much work. And I ran James Golding at Simmons in the S5000, which I enjoyed because I just think he's a major talent and I loved working with him and watching how he works and how dedicated he is and how smart he is.
And the results have been going on the board in the supercar, well, since he got back in one.
Hope he keeps
last
going.
Year and so far off to a good start this year as well, which is great to see.
Yeah.
So what's your official – you don't have an official description, you're just the bloke who hangs around.
I'm
a
just a wanker.
Yeah.
They call me an engineer, but I can't spell engineer. It's pretty funny. It
starts with I.
Yeah, I-N-G. Yeah. No, it's just like I suppose I ran Jordan's car and you sort of do the setup and that, but I do the setup from what I know from experience, not from looking at squiggly lines and that sort of thing. So you need the young engineers to have their input in it as well.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand any of that stuff.
It's all right. Most people don't, even though they say they do.
I think they could be right.
And then there's another connection too, because your grandson's been doing some racing in the Hyundai Excels and he's actually working here in Melbourne now, isn't he, at GRM. So there's, you know, another one going.
I got him going doing – he'd never done go-karts and he started off in doing carnicross.
Oh, yeah.
And motor carnas in an old Hyundai, standard Hyundai. And then we bought a little race car and got that going a bit better and he actually won the championship in his first year in Tassie. And then last year, I think he finished third. We had a few disasters last year, but the racing got better and better. The competitions got better, and it was actually very enjoyable to do. And then he did the GRM Combine, and to see a kid that you've been teaching to change gears in a Hyundai XL 18 months ago driving an S5000.
It's a bit of a change.
Oh, granddad was shitting himself.
I'm sure he was just a slightly bit nervous to see all that. But he went good. He went well.
Yeah, he went well. And now he's working a GRM in the workshop and doing all sorts of things, and with plenty of discipline from the Rogers boys, and they'll keep him in line and see how he goes. And he'll have a few drives this year. He's going to do a few Formula Ford rounds in Victoria, hopefully, and he's doing a bit of testing in various cars at GRM, so we'll see what happens.
What do you call Gary?
Dad. He calls me Sonny. And so it's Gary, Barry and Larry, I think.
Yeah. I tell you what we do have too, mate. It's our National Motor Racing Museum Cat Tracer questions. Of course, the museum up at Mount Panorama's got an amazing array of race cars and motorbikes and memorabilia. By the way, are you a memorabilia keeper? Like, are you a hoarder of suits and helmets and stuff, or are you a throwawayer or somewhere in the middle to all that?
I've got them laying in the shed. Someone was looking at that Sandown 500 trophy the other day trying to read what it was because it's so tarnished you can't even read it. But I've got a few helmets and a few suits and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, okay. See, not a hoarder, but not a getter in somewhere in the middle. That's all right. So questions from our listeners and our Fiat Sleuth faithful who follow what we do.
Yep.
The minute we put a call out to say who's going to be on an upcoming episode, bang, goes off. Sometimes our guests have had a little sniff and a little bit of a read, and I think you have by the sound of it.
I've been fed a bit of information about some of the questions.
Yeah. So let's see if that helps you here or if the lies change in the stories, which is probably more to the point. Stuart Bath wants to know, what happened to the dog bone Honda that you drove in Targa? Is that still around?
That was Ross Palmer's car, and it went back to Queensland and Ross turned it into a Brabham Honda at one stage and had the big guards on it and a supercharged engine in it, and it still exists, and I think Ian Palmer's got it to this day.
Because the other thing we didn't talk about earlier on in the podcast was that you drove it at the Eastern Creek 12-hour with Jack.
Yeah.
Which I only just remembered to drop that in. So this amazing story of your childhood. Was he your childhood hero?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, big
time. He was the only one. Jack Brabham, that was the name in Australian motorsport. He was the man.
So this is a couple of years after you do the Targa stuff and you guys drive it because the Bathurst 12-hour stopped at Easter there and then ran for 1 year at Eastern Creek and you guys drove that Honda. But it wasn't a dog bone Honda by then. Wasn't it sponsored by Hungry Jacks, yeah. That's right, and it was too. Salad company or something.
No, well, that was Ross, a Palmer Ross thing. Bought that salad technology into Australia where they gas the bags of salad so that they last longer and they don't get squashed and that sort of thing.
Fresh cuts.
Hungry Jacks, and across the windscreen it was Jack's back.
Yeah, that's right.
Love it.
Ian Ferrier's question, who's the hardest racer that you had to compete against over the journey?
They're all too hard for me. I wasn't good enough.
Come on, man.
No, I don't know. Like, there's been some.
Who was the fun? Who'd you love to get one up on?
Well, I suppose in the later years in TCM, the goal was always to beat Bowie. And in that race at Bathurst, that last race I probably won in the Charger, he passed me under brakes like, I'd stopped 50 metres too early going into Hell Corner. And then the same lap, he locked up the right front down into the chase and blew the tyre, you know, and that was getting one up on him was good because you don't get to beat JB too often.
Yeah, his winning rate in TCM is
bullshit
ridiculous.
It's amazing.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Do you reckon he's going to still find a way to come back next year?
He won't be able to leave it. He can't.
You know, I'm retiring from full-time TCM.
Yeah,
but what does that mean? He does every one but one round next year?
He'll turn up somewhere.
He'll be somewhere. Andrew Sluice wants to know, ask him about the Brabham MRD1.
Yep.
You've got a pretty cool car. Tell our listeners about it.
Well, the first Melbourne Grand Prix I was at, and once again, Jack was there because they had the BT19 there that he'd won his last world championship in, and they had a display of Brabhams there. And we're walking around looking at the cars and he said, see that car there? He said, that's the first car Ron and I ever built. And I looked at it and I thought, I wasn't sure what it was because it looked like a Formula 3 car. It was painted in the later model green, had a different bigger wheels and that on. I think they'd probably turned it into a Formula 3 car. But that was the car that Gavin Yule, who was also from Perth where I grew up and from Simmons Plains, had bought in England and ran it in England at Goodwood and then bought it back here and won the Australian Formula Junior Championship in it. And that was the MRD FJ1, which retrospectively was called Brabham BT1, the first car that Jack and Ron ever built in England. And when I retired, I went looking for it and I found it up at Kinglake in a garage, up in a loft. A bloke had pulled it apart, ready to restore it, and he restored it for me, and I've still got the car to this day, which is the very first Brabham.
And MRD was Motor Racing Developments, that was sort of the banner that they
It was their company all the way through, Motor Racing Developments, but they quickly changed it from MRD when the French journalist explained to him that MERD
is French in for
French for
SHIT. Which is true. I did French.
So I'm the sort of custodian of that car, I suppose, and it sort of lives in the museum, in the Motor Museum in Launceston most of the time.
Has it been out for a run or?
Not recently, but I need to get it out and give it a run. It's at Woolmer's Estate at the moment, sitting in the foyer there, because they've just had the Longford Motorama.
Great car. That's a cool piece of...
I
love the Crick Brabham story because it's a cracker. So that adds another element to it as well that we added to before. Yeah. Watched him as a kid, then got to do some stuff with him competing, became friends, and you own the first car that they built in the UK. That is really cool, really cool. Chris Williams has got a good question here, and I think you can answer this safely and you won't get in trouble. What's the race car that you hated driving the most? Or will you get in trouble?
No, I won't get into trouble.
What do you reckon?
I don't know. I've never really hated any of them, but that Stone Brothers Falcon, I didn't like that at all. That was probably it's quite amazing, isn't it? Like that car, Marcus could do, you know, two or three laps in it, and then it'd be gone because the back tyres would be gone. And somehow they overcame that, and as soon as they overcame it, he just started winning.
And winning lots.
Yeah.
Did a bit of that.
And still able to keep his style, because it's very interesting what he does. Like he's going in 10 metres under brakes further, so he's on full throttle for 10 metres longer, and then he overslows it in the corner. His mid-corner speed's probably not what a traditional driver would be, but then he's on the throttle 15 metres before.
And driving it out,
so he's got more speed down the straight. And I think that's how Craig Lowndes drove as well, when I watch how he drove.
Totally. Gavin McGee, do you remember the backfiring Mirages in New Zealand? Well, I sense there's a story of skullduggery here.
I don't know. A lot of people will remember of my vintage will remember Bob Tindall, and Bob was just a great bloke and a bit of a rat bag, and we lost him about 25 years ago. Just a fantastic bloke, and we were best friends, and we all went to New Zealand together to race sports sedans. There was Keith Carling, Des Wall, Bill Addard, myself, Bob Tindall. I think that's about it, five or six of us. And we went to Wigram to race, and so it was a bit of an experience. They flew our cars across on a jumbo on pallets and unloaded them, and I never forget my car. I had my RX-7 then. Was unloaded off the pallet onto a tandem trailer, and it was towed to the track behind a low-light Morris Minor, which was a modern car in Christchurch in those days. Went to the track, and it was sort of an airfield, and they wheeled some Euclid tyres out and put them down, and that was the passenger, the spectator barriers, and it was just awesome, you know. It was
old
just
school.
Old school and awesome fun, and the Kiwis, like they always are, so enthusiastic about their racing and just love what they're doing. And Trevor Crowe was driving the Oldsmobile Starlet.
Oh, yeah.
A Toyota Starlet with the Oldsmobile engine, and he cleaned us all up well and good, including Bob, who probably had the best car of all of us at that stage. But anyway, that's just the racing. We had an awesome lot of fun, and that's when motor racing was fun and you're allowed to have fun, you know. And we discovered that we had these Mitsubishi Mirage renter cars that had carburetors not injected, and if you turned them off and pumped the accelerator and turned them back on going through a tunnel or something, they'd make a beaut explosion, you know, out of the exhaust. We were staying at Latimer Lodge, which was owned by some pretty famous Kiwis, the Knight family, who were big speedboat racers. And we were staying in Latimer Lodge, which was right in the centre of Christchurch. And one of the boys, who shall remain nameless, was out doing a couple of laps around the block doing some backfires. Next minute, there were sirens everywhere, and he was back in Latimer Lodge. And I had my wife and my three-month-old son with me. And next minute, there were SWAT teams everywhere, and the gates of Latimer Lodge was closed down, and they had the SWAT teams out with these high-powered rifles and all the streets shut off because there was someone shooting at people down the street. And it was actually a Mitsubishi Mirage that was shooting at people. So the whole of the centre of Christchurch was locked down.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, they've got to watch those Mirages.
You do.
They're dangerous.
Yeah.
I think this is a loaded question.
Yeah.
Mark McLaughlin, what's the best V8 Super K you've driven?
I've already said that, yeah. And it was the 2000 wheel car, yep, by far, and he was the engine builder.
The engine was all right,
it was,
too?
Yeah, it was a good engine.
All right.
He's a bloody good engine builder, and he's a bloody good driver too. How many times did he come second in the Gold Star to Scafey? Three times, I think, didn't he?
A couple, yeah.
He's a bridesmaid, poor old Shocker.
Yeah. I'm just looking down a list of questions here. There's a couple we've covered. There's a couple we haven't.
Mm.
Clifton Campbell asks, ask Cricky about the time he asked his stunt double to do an interview for him at Simmons Plains.
Well, we are Tasmanian. He's from Hobart, and we didn't know one another till a few years ago when Charlie O'Brien said to me, come over and meet your brother. Clifton was working for Charlie on the Utes, and I'd never met Cliffy before, and we're just a dead ringer of one another, so we often suggest that someone's parents have been playing up. We're from different ends of the island, but I don't know, I can't remember it properly, but apparently I left him to do an interview and nicked off and they didn't know the difference.
love it. Mick Blake would like to know, where's the charger? What ended up happening to it?
Rod Salmon, who raced in GTs, bought the car, and I don't think he's ever raced it, but it just sits under his house.
But it's around.
It's still in one piece somewhere.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Tucked away. Daryl Weaver wants to know what happened to the Viper that you had. Now we remember that there was two.
Well, the first one is still in Australia, but the second one went back to America.
Right.
Mm.
We can't go finding that one quickly anytime soon.
No.
There's a question here from Paul the Dude Morris.
Oh, no.
You've grabbed the arms on the chair. You're going for a drink. Yeah, you better have a drink before this one. This one's come from Instagram. Ask him about being Bear Grylls' helicopter pilot. When were you Bear Grylls' helicopter pilot? Because I know you are a pilot of helicopters.
Yeah, well, according to Paul, I was Bear Grylls' helicopter pilot.
Oh, right. Okay.
In so Mackay.
Tell the story. What?
So we flew in Paul's chopper up to Mackay when he was racing sprint cars to do a sprint car race, and I think he won. So he had what he called walking around money. There was $4,000 or $5,000 prize money, so we had to go and spend it in the pub. So we went to the pub having a few beers and a bit of fun, and there were a few locals hanging around, and they said, what are you blokes doing here? And Paul said, look, I can't really say much about it. We're on a pretty secret sort of a mission. And they kept out, look, I can tell you, your friends, I know you're not going to say anything, you know, we're here doing a big television story about the stingrays with Bear Grylls. And see that bloke over there, that's his helicopter pilot. That was me. So we had all these people gathered around. He's told them this story about how we're going to, you know, find all these stingrays and do stories about the stingrays, and Bear Grylls is here, but he's not with us right now. And so all the people were wanting to know where he was because they all watched Bear Grylls on TV. And we got to the airport the next morning when we were flying out, and there were people there everywhere waiting to see if Bear Grylls was there. Just a typical Paul Morris story.
But his pilot was there though, so that was okay.
Exactly,
it was
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Love it.
I'll tell you another one of his.
On.
When this is probably easier to tell, but Dale Earnhardt had his big testing crash and had really bad concussion and, you know, was
a junior, we were talking about junior.
Yeah, of course, and was out of racing, couldn't race. So Marcus was back here, no interest in racing, wouldn't talk to anyone about anything. So I seemed to be the PR conduit that got all the phone calls. Do you reckon you could get Marcus to drive this? Would Marcus do this? And I'd say, I don't reckon. because he changed his phone number and he just did not want to know about anything to do with motorsport. But thankfully he's changed that now and he's back into it flat out and helping people and helping young people develop and that sort of thing, which is great. But he was had no interest. He was just worn out. He didn't want to know about it. So Paul rings me up and says, can you get me Marcus's number? He said, Dale Jr. wants to speak to him, wants him to come over and drive his car for him because he can't drive. And I said, oh, well, I don't know, I'll ask him, but it might, I'll have to find him, it might take me a couple of days. So I wanted to talk to Marcus before I gave him the number, you see. So I went and found Marcus, and in the meantime, Paul had told Dale Earnhardt that it'd be a couple of days before I could get the number because Marcus was up at his lodge in the mountains and I'd have to walk up there in snowshoes to get the number because there was no phone service. So then I got a message from Dale Jr. thanking me for how much trouble I went to get the phone number. Of course, it was all Paul Morris bullshit.
But a great story, yeah. And he really appreciated it. Another one from Instagram. I only got a couple to go. It's been a wonderful chat. Thank you so much for the time. We've got a couple to get through here. Another one from Instagram. Were there background dealings done when you loaned your Viper to John Bow at Winton in the Nations Cup? Because I think from memory, I can't remember why.
The Ferrari blew up.
The Ferrari blown up, so you let him have the Viper for a
while. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
I hope you charged.
No, nothing.
What?
No.
You're a good bloke. That's a good deal.
Oh, he's my Tasmanian cousin.
No. Oh. Got to look after him.
No, it was...
No background dealings there?
No, there was nothing. No, it was just they blew the Ferrari up. I think it was going to – it stopped his chance of winning the championship, I think, and I wasn't going to run there, so I just lent him the car.
Oh, you're a good bloke. Didn't even send an invoice.
Oh, no.
Jeez.
I probably should write one out now, shouldn't
I? You probably can.
Do you reckon I'd get the money off him?
It's only been 20 years. But <You're> I don't like your chances just quietly. One more from Connor. I can't read his full Instagram handle out because I'll be here all day. Always a big fan of Cricky. Wanted to know what happened. What happened to the Alpha that was supposed to run at Bathurst in 85?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about this.
Oh, well, look, that's funny because I only saw that on something. I'd forgotten all about it. But I had a friend called Ray Dickinson from Sydney who I'd met in the 70s when his mate Rocky Pye – no, sorry, that's the wrong name – he had the Blues Union L34, the Jack and – was it Jack and Sterling Moss ran at Bathurst?
Yeah, 76, yep.
Yeah. So they arrived down in Tassie to go and do a touring car round in Tassie.
Oh, so this is after Jack's raced it?
Yeah, later on. One of the funniest things I've ever seen. It was when I was in my service station at Perth and I'm working away in the garage and my business partner, Spide, comes and says, mate, come and have a look at these dickheads out here. So I've gone out the front and there was a Leyland Boxer truck with the L34 on the back, three blokes in the front of the truck, four in the Tirana on the back of a flat tray, and they had Peter Granger's BMW on a trailer behind that with two people in that. They'd come from Sydney like that. And I met all these guys, Ray Dickinson, Phil McDonald, and the name escapes me, the bloke. Barry Allen drove the L34.
Yeah,
Barry Allen. And I got to know all of them and we've been friends and I still talk to Dicko every week, you know, and this was a long, long time ago that I first met them. So Phil and Dicko saw me race a few times here and Phil said, oh, you should have a drive with us at Bathurst in Alfetta. And I don't know what happened, but it never happened. I know I was entered in it.
Oh, so your name's on an entry list somewhere.
I was entered and I only saw it the other day. I remember it happening. And we must have talked about it, but I don't know what happened. I've got no idea.
It got on the list, but that's about as far as it got. It's written down somewhere never actually became
a thing.
Tell you what has happened, a lot of really good stuff. We've talked about so many things and there's probably stories and bits that we've left out or that we've forgotten.
There's a lot you need to leave out, I reckon.
Yeah, well, the lawyers will check it before we run this. anyway, but Cricky, thank you for the chat, mate. We've covered a fair bit of ground. It's... you're one of the really loved people in Australian motor racing and I think you should have never underestimated that a little bloke from Tassie could go so well. You probably have sold yourself a long way short over the journey, but national championships, cool cars, cool stories, and let's just hope and pray for one thing this year, that Geelong do not win the flag again because you'll be insufferable for another 12 months.
Again, no, thanks for the opportunity, Noon. It's been great. Thank you.
Go the Hawks.
No, no, no.
And that's part three of my chat with Greg Crick. A huge thank you to Cricky for sitting down to talk through his amazing motorsport journey. I learned so much about where he's been and what he's done. What a humble, understated bloke, and what an amazing race driver he's been over the years as well. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and don't forget, Castrol Motorsport News podcast every Tuesday with Andrew Van Leeuwen and Stefan Bartholomaeus. The V8 Sleuth podcast every Wednesday too. It's all part of your listening pleasure on the Motorsport Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Keep the pod suggestions flying in, and I'll chat with you again next week. Thanks for tuning in.